And good evening and welcome to this edition of the Paranet Continuum, the home of common sense, no-nonsense paranormal talk radio. Well, tonight we're going to explore a very, very serious conspiracy. The question tonight is going to be, could modern advances in cancer research and genetic biotechnology have given rise to new viruses and the current and coming plagues? More frightening, could the AIDS and Ebola epidemic have been planned? We're going to cover a book tonight that is the first in-depth exploration into the origin of the world's most feared and deadly viruses, HIV and Ebola. Now, claims that these emerging viruses naturally evolved and then jumped species from monkey to man seem grossly unfounded in light of the compelling evidence assembled in this extraordinary text. Alternatively, the possibility that these bizarre germs were laboratory creations accidentally or even intentionally transmitted via tainted hepatitis, polio, and smallpox vaccines in the U.S. and Africa, as numerous authorities have alleged, is definitely investigated in this book. Now, during the Cold War in the 1960s and early 1970s, the biological weapons race was a horrifying reality. As we've covered on this program, we've talked about MKUltra being one of them. Military contractors with technical support from the World Health Organization developed countless immune system ravaging viruses and experimented with antidote vaccines for national defense and cancer prevention. And we're going to be talking about that tonight with my guest, who is a medical doctor or a doctor. He is a Harvard graduate, independent investigator, and internationally known authority in public health education. He is one of American healthcare's most captivating motivational speakers. He has authored 10 books, including the critically acclaimed Florida Dental AIDS Tragedy Exposé, Deadly Innocence. He lives with his wife and two daughters on Cape Ann, Massachusetts. And it's a pleasure to welcome to the program tonight Dr. Leonard Horowitz. Good evening, Len.
Good evening, Michael.
Thank you for being with us on the program tonight.
My pleasure and privilege.
This book that you've written, Emerging Viruses, AIDS and Ebola, Nature, Accident, or Intentional, is a very, very deep, deep subject and covers a lot of material. We're going to try to get as much of this in on the 2 hours that we have tonight. Kind of outline for me a thesis of what this book is about.
It is an exploration into a 1970 Department of Defense appropriations request for $10 million for a 5-year study to develop immune system ravaging microorganisms for germ warfare that back in 1969 when it was written, these were descriptively and functionally identical to what the AIDS virus is and does. And in essence, I spent 3 years, and the book covers the material, on what I discovered when I began an investigation into that document, following the money through a paper trail that led through the scientific literature and the government documents. Ultimately, I found the United States government contracts under which numerous AIDS-like and Ebola-like viruses were bioengineered by the Army's sixth top biological weapons contracting firm called Litton Bionetics. And so the book, Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola, goes into who made these types of viruses, when they made them, how they made them virtually every step of the way, why they made them, and most incredibly, we found, as I mentioned, the documents, the U.S. government documents showing you even how much U.S. taxpayers paid to finance what appears to be genocide today.
That's incredibly frightening, very disturbing, I must say, and I'm sure for you it's been a very disturbing investigation.
It's been like a roller coaster ride through the Twilight Zone.
Okay, well, we're going to cover all of that tonight. We're going to find out, different aspects of your investigation. But basically, let's start by asking you, how did you get interested in investigating the origin of AIDS and Ebola?
Well, that was because in 1990, I was the chief professional advisor for the largest dental and medical catalog supply company in the world. And because of the case of the Florida dentist, David Acker, who had infected his patients with the AIDS virus, because the dental industry particularly was losing millions of dollars because people were afraid they're going to get AIDS in their dental offices, The CEO of the company, who didn't like losing money, assigned me to the task of developing educational literature to help allay the public's fear, because my background was perfect. I had a Harvard master's in public health and behavioral science. I had done a variety of research programs and produced some packages, one particularly called Overcoming Your Fear of the Dentist. So I knew intimately phobia reduction therapies and how fear was being basically propelled by the media.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been a dentist for 13 years. And basically I began by investigating the Centers for Disease Control's official investigation reports. And I found them to be bogus. And then I found them to be fraudulent. And then after 3 years, I found that they had literally covered up almost all the incriminating evidence against the Florida dentist, including the fact that he believed that he was dying from a virus that the government had created. And he, as a scientifically trained and military dentist for much of his career, held in his possession that most incriminating document that I spoke of earlier, the 1970 Department of Defense appropriations request for $10 million for a 5-year study to develop what is written virtually identical description of what the AIDS virus is and does today. And so I began by, after I spent 3 years publishing 3 scientific reports investigating that case, I published my 9th book, which was called Deadly Innocence. It was based on the 3 scientific reports. The last one I had to go out of the United States to get published, I went to the British Dental Journal because the American Dental Association and the American Medical Association journals refused to publish what I termed, what the paper was titled called Murder and Cover-Up, Could Explain the Florida Dental AIDS Mystery. And so ultimately, the next 3 years was spent investigating that document. That's how I got started.
That's very, a very fascinating story. Am I understanding correctly that in some ways, because of your work, have you been blacklisted, blackballed, or whatever the word would be?
Yes, by the American Dental Association, by the American Academy of General Dentistry, by other medical associations. I have frequent invitations from medical students to bring me in to universities where then the faculty are invited, but frequently it's the sessions are poo-pooed. And I find most of our support for this truth coming from the far right as well as the far left.
Mm, very interesting.
It is very interesting.
You know, I was introduced to you by a friend of mine who is with the BBC, Jason Dacey. And Jason told me, now, Jason is very middle of the road and very critical in his thinking. And after reading your book and discussing it with you, he came away a believer.
Right.
So, you know, I'm taking a look at this as well from the standpoint that your book is packed with factual documents.
That's right.
And we're going to get into that. Now, we're going to take reopening the phone lines here very shortly. I want to get a little bit more ground covered with Dr. Leonard Horowitz on his book, Emerging Viruses, AIDS and Ebola, Nature, Accident, or Intentional. And welcome back to the program, Len.
Thank you, Michael.
Before we get into getting a primer on viruses and how they work, I want to hit on or touch upon, what is Ebola?
Ebola is an ideal biological weapon. It kills 9 out of 10 people within 3 weeks of infection. It has what's called proteolytic enzymes. It's enzymes that destroy the protein in the body, and so it makes your internal organs and your blood vessels dissolve.
Jeez.
Just a mush. So you begin to bleed out of every orifice of your body.
Oh.
And that's ultimately how 9 out of 10 die.
Now, where do we see this virus proliferating right now in the world?
Well, there's small outbreaks happening fairly regularly, and I suspect them. I don't have a lot of evidence, not the evidence that we have in the book Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola, regarding the initial outbreaks of both Ebola as well as AIDS. But I don't trust the government. I have obvious, clear reasons why I don't any longer. So today's outbreaks are questionable, as are clearly the earliest outbreaks of Ebola, that is Ebola Sudan, Ebola Zaire, and even Ebola Kikwit a couple springs ago, spring 95 actually, that is the government is highly incriminated in releasing these microorganisms.
Now let's talk a little bit before we get into the real meat of this. What can you tell us in layman's terms and in very brief synopsis, what is a virus, and how did you come about to suspect that the virus that is responsible for AIDS and Ebola are actually man-made viruses?
Well, a virus is a DNA or an RNA fragment, sometimes surrounded by a coat, a protein coat, And it is, like, for example, with the AIDS virus, it's a series of basically six genes that code for and make up the AIDS virus, and that these are combinations of nucleic acids, by and large, RNA, ribonucleic acid, or DNA, and that what makes me absolutely certain that these types of microorganisms were created in labs, particularly Litton Bionetics research labs under the direction of Dr. Robert Gallo, who was the fellow who allegedly discovered the AIDS virus in 1984, then got involved in the French-American AIDS fracas with Luc Montagnier when it was determined that Gallo stole or cloned Montagnier's virus. The fact is that I've got their scientific papers, I've reprinted the most incriminating ones, I've got their government contracts, I see exactly what the contracts call for, and what they call for is they started with monkey viruses and or chimpanzee viruses, such as simian virus 40, and these they then began to, and by the way, they knew that this SV40, this was in the news a couple of weeks ago when it was determined that the polio vaccines, they said early on, had spread cancer. Well, the truth is that even to this very day, the Food and Drug Administration in the United States must turn a blind eye to as many as 100 simian monkey virus contaminants, including this cancer-causing contaminant called SV40. That's 100 per dose that we're told that we must give our children. And their hands are tied by proprietary laws and non-disclosure agreements, and that's why they're basically, they can't do anything even about it. Health scientists don't even learn about it, most of them. So physicians never learn about the risks of polio vaccines or other vaccines. Mm-hmm. But anyway, they took that particular virus when in 1961 they knew it would cause cancer in virtually every animal it was injected into. In 1962, the government contract shows they began to take this and other viruses that they knew would cause cancer, and they began to recombine them with a whole assortment of other animal cancer viruses, including the cat leukemia virus RNA, the cat leukemia virus, which is now basically ravaging epidemic numbers of cats. In fact, that particular virus was another man-made biologic, not only a bioweapon, but it was a cancer research tool. And this, according to Dr. Gallo's mentors in the scientific literature. And so that was another man-made creation, the cat leukemia virus, which they then recombined with monkey viruses. And then they also took a second favorite there to work with was the chicken leukemia sarcoma virus RNA that caused wasting, immunosuppression, and death. And so when they had what they then called a mutant hybrid of, let's say, the primate cancer viruses, the monkey viruses, plus the cat leukemia. And by the way, that's one of the smoking guns in the book Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola, is that the specific, unique immune suppression cancer complex, that is the lymphoma, leukemia, sarcoma cancer complex, never existed on planet Earth in human beings before 1978 with the first cases of AIDS. And that's precisely what these people spent most of their time and money studying during the largely funded, mostly secret, quote, special virus cancer program, end quote, that ran from 1962 to the mid-1970s. So that's basically they had, once they recombined these viruses that would cause immune suppression and the unique cancer complex, to get it to jump species into humans and then affect humans, they cultured it in human white blood cells in some studies and human fetal tissue cells in culture in other studies so that the external membrane proteins would change, that is, it would adapt for humans and be able to be get carried across the human cell membranes and then infect the gene and then do virtually everything that the AIDS virus does today.
Okay, let me ask you this now. Obviously, the research that you have done, you have had an ability to get an idea for the kinds of people that are involved in this this unconscionable thing. I'm curious, what is the motivation? Why are they doing this?
Well, I think that when you have people like Gallo, I mean, giving them the benefit of the doubt, people like Gallo, who is an outrageous fraud, this man has been investigated for scientific misconduct and or fraud four times over the past three decades. He's gotten off scot-free every time. President Clinton pardoned him the last go-around. When whenever does a president of the United States pardon a health scientist? Well, the answer is when that health scientist has highest level connections to Central Intelligence Agency, biological weapons contractors and scientists involved in this, and knows intimately the ins and outs of the AIDS epidemic and how it is most plausibly man-made, and he lies and he continues to lie about it. That why would he continue to do that? Well, to give him the benefit of the doubt, I'm going to just say that the guy is fully invested in the academic bureaucracy and the AIDS industry and the cancer industry, and he's worked his tail off to get to where he is, which is the highest level position. They just gave him a $50 million U.S. taxpayer-funded facility associated with the University of Maryland called the Institute for Human Virology, and that basically if he starts to open his mouth, it could mean either his academic career, his grants, or his life. Now, that's one good reason, without getting into any conspiracy theory, you know, why these people continue to keep their mouths shut. We have other people who are opening their mouths. We have, for example, Eleanor Coletta, Dr. Coletta, who I spent about 8 hours interviewing about a year ago down in Tampa, Florida area.
Okay.
She was in at Sloan Cancer Kettering Memorial Research Center in 1973 in charge of studying the viral-infected sarcoma cancers of young gay men in New York City in 1973. Viral-induced, and her two bosses, she tells us, were intimately involved with Gallo, constantly, almost on a daily basis, giving Gallo the inside information.
The paths just keep crossing.
I'm sorry?
The paths just keep crossing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Gallo is implicated to the max. We've got him in the final chapter now in the epilogue of the book Emerging Viruses. I have an interview with Gallo, and I show him to be an outrageous fraud.
Now, Dr. Horowitz, before we go into some of the background and the history of this stuff, which is in and of itself very incredible, I want to take a call. We've got Josh calling in from our affiliate in Kansas City, KCMO. Good evening, Josh. You're on with my guest, Dr. Leonard Horowitz.
Yes, good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Josh.
I have a question concerning my pets. Back about 1985 or 86, I had a cat which became seriously ill, and I took her to the vet, and her liver was failing. She was jaundiced and turning yellow. She was a totally white cat, but her eyes and all of her mucous membranes and everything were turning yellow. Well, they diagnosed her with feline leukemia, and he told me that she probably had maybe a less than 10% chance of surviving this. But instead of housing her in the clinic, I took her home, and he gave me some medicine, and I nursed her 24 hours a day, and she survived. And he was amazed that she survived this. My question is, does this mean anything in relation to what you're talking about? And also, I now have a dog, and how should I be concerned about taking him for his vaccinations at the vet?
Well, it's a miracle that your cat survived, I think. So you really got lucky. You gave her a lot of love. I think that's probably the most important thing. But my question to you is, before she came down with feline leukemia, had she gotten vaccinated?
You know, he's gone.
Oh, too bad.
Yeah.
Because that's my first question. And then with regard to the dogs, well, you see, the fellow who wrote the foreword to the book Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola, his name is W. John Martin, M.D., Ph.D. He's one of the world's leading vaccine contamination analysts who worked at the FDA in charge of testing their human vaccines for contamination between 1980 and 86. And, of course, in the book, not only do we bring out the fact that the first international pandemic of any type of a viral-infected illness was the parvovirus in dogs, which followed the vaccine program that suddenly dogs all over the world virtually simultaneously broke out with parvovirus infection. And so
I remember that.
Yeah, it was the first indication that a vaccine program could deliver serious illness around the world and have the breakout virtually simultaneously, which we saw again with AIDS, where it broke out virtually simultaneously in New York City and Central Africa in around 1978. And that precisely followed the 1974 experimental hepatitis B vaccine that was prepared and then in New York City by Merck and Company. And Dr. Maurice Hilleman, who actually admitted in an interview in 1986 that he brought the AIDS virus into the United States in contaminated monkeys destined for research and development at Merck, precisely at the time that we show you they put that vaccine together and then gave it to the gay men in New York City and the blacks in Central Africa. Well, at any rate, Martin also comes out and says that these types of viral infected vaccines and viral contaminated vaccines could very easily be spreading these types of illnesses not only to animals, our pets, but also to humans.
Now, let me ask you this. What kind of statistics are we dealing with today since, say, the mid-70s? Are people generally less healthy? Are we seeing more increases in cancers and other illnesses, life-threatening illnesses?
I think you're seeing the new plagues, a horrendous and a horrific increase in the vaccine-related illnesses. That is, the autoimmune system-related disorders, many with neurological problems and or weird cancers that have no family history. And let me give you the short list of these, Michael, so that you understand the vaccine-related illnesses, the new plagues that we're talking about.
Okay.
These include, now all of these, again, have been linked to vaccine contaminants, vaccine ingredients, or vaccine injuries. These include, and this is the short list, chronic fatigue immune dysfunction, fibromyalgia, lupus, MS, ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease, Guillain-Barré, chronic crippling rheumatoid arthritis, adult and juvenile type 1 autoimmune diabetes, asthma, hay fever, and allergies, which we had some extent, but we never had it in the epidemic proportions like we're seeing today.
Right.
We know they are linked definitively to these vaccines. And then you've got autism, attention deficit, hyperactivity disorders. Came out on CNN 2 days ago that 5 to 6% of the United States' children today are hyperactive or have attention deficit. And this, again, has been definitively linked. Dr. Martin has written about this in the scientific literature, finding, for example, monkey virus genes in the brains of these children suffering with ADD. And so you've got these illnesses, and then you've got the cancers, leukemia, lymphoma, sarcoma, and that these have been, again, linked to the vaccine programs in more ways than one.
The truth is stranger than fiction at times, and a clear point and example of that is tonight. Here we are sitting here talking with a doctor, Leonard Horowitz, who has thoroughly researched the subject of AIDS and Ebola, has reduced his research into a book called Emerging Viruses, AIDS and Ebola, and we're hearing a very disturbing story. And Dr. Horowitz said, what I'd like to do is at this particular point, and something we've talked about on this program many, many times has been MKUltra and some of the inhumane, the nasty, if you will, the insidious experimentation that has been done on human beings at the hands of the CIA. What did your research show you concerning this?
Well, there's an absolute link to Central Intelligence. You mentioned Sidney Gottlieb before. Basically, all of this biological weapons program was done. It was called MK Naomi. And if you're a student of MK Ultra, you know that MK Naomi was actually a subordinate part of the mind control population control programs.
Right.
In fact, they were developing biologicals that would actually help to reduce either populations or control populations. And this particular area of research in biological weapons, the buck stopped with Henry Kissinger. In fact, it was in 1969 when Kissinger took over as National Security Advisor under Richard Nixon, and he almost immediately ordered Melvin Laird, who was Secretary of Defense, to do a reassessment of America's biological weapons capabilities because he was looking for alternatives to nuclear weapons. He became the nuclear weapons guru of the world because Nelson Rockefeller appointed Kissinger as Council of Foreign Relations Nuclear Weapons Study Group Director in 1955. And that's why we have nuclear weapons deployed around the face of the planet today,
mm-hmm.
because Kissinger published that thesis, and it really went along to support the military, medical, industrialists, the Rockefellers and their friends. And so ultimately, the buck stopped with Kissinger. Now, who said that? Is that something that's, you know, foolish conspiracy theory, or is that documented fact? It's documented fact. It's written in the United States Congressional Records. It is the testimony of Richard Helms, CIA director, when brought in front of Congress in 1975 in front of the Frank Church congressional hearings into the CIA's illegal storage and utilization of biological weapons long after the signing of the Geneva Accord by Nixon, as promulgated by Kissinger. Helms said that the CIA was being virtually forced by Kissinger to maintain an offensive capability in the area long after it was illegal. And in fact, he said that Kissinger well expected them to be prepared to use biological weapons in the, quote, gray areas of operation, end quote, wherein the hand of the United States military would not show. And where was that, Michael? In 1972, 73, 74, that was precisely in Central Africa, which today is the heart of the African AIDS belt, close to ground zero for Ebola virus outbreak. It was Kissinger who sent the first 100 CIA operatives into foment unrest in the Zaire area for the Zaire-Angola war, which is virtually continuing to this day.
No. Let me ask you a question, and I'm just kind of curious about this, because a couple of weeks ago we had a woman on who was talking about environmentalism and population, zero population growth, and all of this stuff. I'm curious, does any of this research that you've done link up to any of this other stuff that's going on with the United Nations and some of the goals that they have to depopulate the world?
Oh, absolutely. Now, first of all, linking now, before we go there, let's make it be absolutely certain that Litton Bionetics' lab, that was six top biological weapons for the United States Army, that they created literally population-destroying viruses that could not be reconciled unless you consider population control. And to prove that point, you've got the book there, I understand, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
If you turn to page 452 of the book, Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola, there, what you're looking at is a United States official government document. That is Litton Bionetics' report to the National Cancer Institute in 1971. If you look down the list of the different viruses and the mutant virus recombinants that they created and that they were working with in their lab at that time, you see about 7th and 8th down is acute lymphocytic leukemia virus,
right,
recombined with influenza and para-influenza viruses.
Right, I see that.
In other words, how would you like to have an airborne leukemia virus? One that would spread leukemia by sneezing like a common flu.
And these are things that they were capable of.
Well, it's right there in black and white on a U.S. government document reprinted in the book. So it's not a matter of speculation as to whether they were capable of it. They did it. It's right there. That's what they did. And so the question is, what did they do that for? Did they do that for cancer research? I don't think so.
I don't either.
Okay, and yet, this is a cancer research contract. Right? So number two is, was this done for traditional biological warfare research and development?
I think that's probably a good conclusion.
Well, not really, because why? Because leukemia kills too slowly, doesn't it?
It does.
So it wouldn't be a good bioweapon in the traditional sense, would it?
Not necessarily.
Okay. So what is left? What's the only other option? You're looking at population-reducing agents.
Right. Something that would be slow but yet effective.
That's exactly right. And now you've got a virus that's virtually identical to the AIDS virus with one exception. This is a virtually impossible agent to control. Airborne AIDS is virtually unstoppable, or airborne leukemia is virtually unstoppable, whereas bloodborne pathogens are highly containable. You can spread them through blood, just like the Rockefeller directed New York City Blood Council. Lawrence Rockefeller, for example, put together the New York City Blood Council.
Lawrence Rockefeller?
Yes, it was Lawrence Rockefeller that assembled the New York City Blood Council. That was the council of doctors that put together the New York City Blood Bank. They became the international blood banksters, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the people that allowed 10,000 hemophiliacs throughout the United States and countless others throughout the world to get the HIV-contaminated blood that they knew was contaminated between 1980 and 86 and did nothing significant to clean it up.
Maybe because they had another motive.
Well, that's exactly what the point is.
And again, returning is my guest tonight, Dr. Leonard Horowitz. We're talking about his book, Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola. And Len, if you don't mind, we'll take a quick call. We've got Steve listening in on in our affiliate in Juneau, Alaska, KINY. Good evening, Steve.
Good evening. Thanks for this opportunity to comment. Enjoy your program.
Thank you.
And I wanted to ask, in your host opinion, is there a concern, or should I be concerned about taking my cat to the veterinarian for ordinary vaccinations, such as feline leukemia?
I would be even more concerned about taking my children into the public health units to get your free vaccines, or even if you have to pay for them. Again, that's based on the fact that you've got these vaccine-related disorders that are in epidemic proportions today. You know, I'll give you another example. For example, today's chickenpox vaccine, which is being highly recommended for our children. When you read the technical report, it contains in it mercury, formaldehyde, formalin, and aluminum derivatives for stability and sterility. It contains foreign RNA and DNA, which is a nice way of saying carcinogens or mutagens or cancer-causing agents, because, and they don't even tell you where it could come from. It could come from bovine sources or chicken embryos or viruses or bacteria, RNA and DNA. It basically, you're left unknowing where these things are coming from. And then it tells you it's got herpes viruses in it. Now, it wouldn't bother me if it said herpes zoster, because that's chickenpox. But just very similar to the polio vaccines, which not only delivered the cancer virus called simian virus 40 and the other monkey viruses that were in the monkey kidney tissues that, in which the vaccines were partially prepared, the other types of polio vaccine contaminants included the herpes type viruses, simian cytomegalo, Epstein-Barr, herpes B, and of course Epstein-Barr and cytomegalo have been associated with chronic fatigue, immune dysfunction, and fibromyalgia, and again, even some of the bizarre cancers.
Lynn, I have to starting to get into the CIA research and all of that, and I want to pick up this part of the program and talk about interesting, as I call them, vectors. You mentioned in the first hour Dr. Lawrence Rockefeller as being involved in a peripheral fashion in some parts of this. But the thing I found really interesting is you've done a considerable amount of research into one of the largest pharmaceutical companies in the world. That's Merck Sharp & Dohme. And the former president of Merck Sharp & Dohme, George Merck. What can you tell us about him?
Well, he was also – now, this is highly disturbing. In fact, what I'm about to tell you represents the greatest conflict of interest in the history of the planet. Basically, George W. Merck, the president of Merck Sharp & Dohme, was America's biological weapons industry director, personally appointed by President Roosevelt and Secretary of War Stimson. And he was in this position advising Roosevelt at the time that Hitler ordered Martin Bormann to meet with his partners, who were IG Farben, Germany's leading industrial organization, and the Rockefeller family, the Standard Oil people, that at the time that that George Merck was advising Roosevelt and Secretary of War Stimson, his company received a major share of the Nazi war chest.
Really?
Yes, in 1944, when Hitler knew he was going to lose the war already, he ordered Bormann to a meeting. Bormann was director of the economy, of Germany's economy, and the Third Reich's war chest. He said to Bormann, he said, quote, bury your treasure, end quote, for we will need it not only for Germany's economic recovery post-World War II, we will need it for, quote, the rise of the Fourth Reich, end quote.
Uh-huh.
And so Bormann was then told to meet with his partners to discuss where they should put the money. And the partners, as I said, was IG Farben. These were the people that held a patent on the gas that killed those millions of people during the Holocaust. These were, for all practical purposes, the Third Reich.
Right.
Basically, the highest administrators of the company were the highest SS officers.
Uh-huh.
And their full-fledged partner was Standard Oil, John D. Rockefeller Standard Oil. In fact, the partnership was cemented by the Dulles brothers, who was the Rockefeller's legal counsel and business managers from the Wall Street legal firm of Cromwell and Sullivan. They negotiated in 1938 for $35 million that Rockefeller paid IG.
Uh-huh.
Standard Oil received the patent rights over the synthetic oil and rubber that the Holocaust victims were about to produce in the Holocaust victim built and run factories outside of Auschwitz and elsewhere. So full-fledged partners were Rockefellers in the Third Reich. And so now when 1944, Hitler knew he was going to lose the war, and they ordered Bormann to direct the money. They directed it to 750 corporations for the, quote, New Ordnung, end quote. That is, New Order, or what today we call the New World Order. And that money placed in those companies, and in fact, that word was in the recently released, previously secret, IG Farben literature, and the pharmaceutical literature, by the way, and that it talked about how the world could be controlled by creating a monopoly over the world's pharmaceutical and chemical industries, because they could also take out selected populations silently and untraceably, just like is happening today.
Let me ask you this question. Given this kind of thing coming down the pike, is it entirely possible that there is an antidote for the AIDS virus? Because what prevents the mucky mucks that are running this and causing all of these problems, what prevents them from getting infected?
Oh, absolutely. They've withheld the most important cures and preventatives. In fact, we go over that in a tape package called Taking Care of Yourself. I go into a five-step process for bringing ourselves back to optimal health.
Okay.
And that includes, number one, detoxification. Number two, deacidification. Number three, boosting the immune system every way possible, physically, mentally, emotionally, socially, environmentally, and above all, spiritually. And then steps four and five have both been royally suppressed by the government. Number four is oxygenation therapies. And number five, in fact, they could have cleaned up all the blood supplies. You know, they could have cleaned out the hepatitis virus and hepatitis C out of the blood supply. They could have cleaned up the AIDS virus had they desired to. They never wanted to.
With oxygenation.
Oxygenation therapies, right, with oxygenation of the blood supply. And then step five has been really tremendously suppressed. I'm sure you've gotten into it in past shows with Project HARP. Basically, it was the brilliant work of the last century's most genius investigator, Tesla. And Tesla's bioelectric therapies that spun off of his work and Royal Raymond Rife's work, basically you isolated specific electromagnetic frequencies to do a variety of different things, including healing, including what Dr. Robert Strecker says in the book Emerging Viruses, AIDS and Ebola, shaking down these viruses, which are in essence crystals.
Mm-hmm.
And the protein prion is another one. It's a crystal. Crystalline structure that you could very likely, if not definitely, shake down, break apart, without leaving the rest of the cells harmed at all. It's kind of like, I guess it's Ella Fitzgerald sings a high note and smashes a crystal glass where the rest of the house
right.
stays intact.
Uh-huh.
It's the same sort of concept through electromagnetic frequencies, sound and or light frequencies. Generated by these the various Rife units today, you can actually do this. Now, the government has been suppressing this knowledge. And it's really, very, very common. In fact, there was a recent study that when physicians have to recommend therapy for their own family, their own friends, for cancer, instead of radiation and chemotherapies, they send them for holistic therapies, just like we're discussing now.
My guest tonight is Dr. Leonard Horowitz. The book is Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola. And if you don't find it in a bookstore here in the Denver area, you can order it direct from Dr. Horowitz's publishing company, and we'll give out that information. And also, he has a website, which we're going to give you the URL for. Dr. Horowitz, what I'd like to do is, kind of go into a little bit different area here. Your research leads us to question the safety of all vaccinations. Now, most people believe that vaccinations were responsible for the virtual elimination of, say, smallpox and polio. Is this true?
Well, there's some speculation with regard to smallpox that it was the vaccine more than the hygiene and nutritional improvements that created the elimination of smallpox off the planet. The debate continues to this very day, but let's give that the benefit of the doubt. Let's say that smallpox was eliminated. When we because of vaccines. When we look at the other illnesses, we find it's far more compelling evidence to show that polio and the other infectious diseases were well on their way off of planet Earth because of primarily improvements in hygiene and nutrition.
Mm.
I was taught that when I was doing my master's of public health training at Harvard.
Uh-huh.
And so basically what we have today is propaganda and spin doctors telling us that, oh, no, it's the vaccines that cause these improvements. And when, in fact, to date, the authorities at the CDC, the Food and Drug Administration, who I've debated, they have no definitive what's called risk-benefit analysis done on any of these vaccines. That means that they, to this day, they don't know whether they're not killing and maiming more people than they're helping and saving by these vaccines. I mentioned in the last hour the short list of all the autoimmune system-related disorders and weird cancers with no family history that have been linked to vaccine ingredients, vaccine contaminants, or vaccine injuries. Again, these include chronic fatigue, immune dysfunction, fibromyalgia, lupus, MS, ALS, or Lou Gehrig's disease, Guillain-Barré, Crohn's disease, Alzheimer's, attention deficit, hyperactivity disorders in our children, autism, chronic crippling rheumatoid arthritis, adult onset and juvenile type 1 diabetes, that's autoimmune. All of these, plus leukemia, lymphoma, sarcoma, cancer epidemics that came from nowhere. I mean, it was non-existent, virtually non-existent back in the 40s and early 50s. All of a sudden, in the late 60s, it started to come about where we had a huge increase in these specific types of cancers. Lymphoma certainly came from the African, Central Africa. We know that for certain. And we know that this is precisely where Litton Bionetics Research Labs was set up. And we know that Litton supplied the vaccine manufacturers with their with the monkeys and the chimpanzees that they used to create the polio vaccines and several of the other vaccines, including hepatitis.
What about swine flu vaccinations and that type of thing?
I mean, that's, now you're touching on a really personal subject, Michael. The reason being is because my mother died of a disease called Guillain-Barré linked specifically to that vaccine.
Really?
Yes. She, like tens of thousands of other people who got first the swine flu and then the subsequent flu vaccines, and it's not all only flu vaccines. The tetanus vaccine is also related to Guillain-Barré. That is a progressive neurological problem whereby my mother's white blood cells, after they were stimulated by the vaccine ingredients, they began to attack and destroy the myelin sheath surrounding my mother's nerve fibers. She became progressively weaker, then paralyzed. She suffered with that for about 3 years, and then a few months later, she developed cancer. And that's another immune system-related deficiency disorder. And in a few radiation treatments and a couple months more, my mother was dead.
My goodness.
So, and that's time and time again. I meet several people a week who have the same story. The flu vaccines, in fact, I asked my audiences all over the country, how many of you have gotten sick after getting the flu vaccine?
I've known people that have done that, too.
Oh, it's a horrific number. It's basically, the polls that I've been taking, consistently it's 60, 65, 70% of the audience has raised their hand. They take the vaccine so they don't get the flu, and then they get the flu horribly.
I personally would never take a vaccine.
Yeah, well, you're smart.
So what you're saying then is people, how about people who are under the impression that vaccinations are required by, say, schools and daycare or even certain employers? Is there a way to legally avoid getting shots and still have our children attend school and daycare?
Absolutely. And I go over this intently. I'll give you the basics tonight, but basically I urge people to get a copy of the tape Horowitz on Vaccines. It's a 90-minute tape that is really must-listening because it's got not only the information on how to do this, how to get out, which I'll just briefly summarize. I spent 20 minutes on it on that tape. But also what's more important is people need the real facts from virtually the horse's mouth. That is given on that tape when we've reprinted, actually we've published Dr. Hilleman's audio interview. Dr. Hilleman is the world's leading vaccine developer for Merck and Company. He was President Clinton's awardee of the Sabin Gold Medal of Honor in 1998. That's the most esteemed medal of honor in American medicine. Dr. Hilleman, on tape, is admitting he brought the AIDS virus into North America in contaminated monkeys destined for vaccine research and development at Merck. He goes on to tell you how hideously contaminated the vaccines, the Merck vaccines were. For example, yellow fever vaccine spread leukemia viruses places around the world, he tells you. The polio vaccine spread SV40. That's other cancer viruses around the world, he tells you. And the fact is that the bottom line, to answer your question, is with that information, you will be empowered to get out in 48 states. You can demand both religious and spiritual exemptions. 13 states have philosophical exemptions, personal, just your choice from a personal standpoint, you can exempt out. And what we urge people to do is commit to memory what we exactly tell you to say to these people who tell you that you must get vaccinated. In fact, they themselves don't know. They've been brainwashed virtually. They have no idea that it's you have a religious exemption. In fact, we tell the school administrators, I'm sorry, in 48 states, and this being one, for example, California, we are not required by law to get these vaccines. In fact, we have a religious exemption. We're still living in America. We supposedly have separation of church and state. We have civil rights. We can make these choices.
Right.
You know, we don't. We have separation of church and state. Maybe we should have separation of medicine and state as well, don't you think? And the bottom line is that you can say, in your desk drawer, Ms. School Administrator or Mr. School Administrator, you have a waiver form that you don't want to tell me about because you get a stipend, a government payoff, so long as you deliver 90% or more of the children into the vaccine program, then you get a payoff now, don't you? And you don't want to tell me that you've got that form. And if you don't have that form in your desk drawer that I want to sign right now, you're negligent. You better go to your public health department and get those forms.
You know, unfortunately, that's true with a lot of the public school system and some of the incentives that they have to do certain things. And I know that's very true. Information imparted here. But, you know, this stuff cannot be denied. And we've covered this topic many times on the program, the idea that mind control and that type of thing has all been a highly crafted, highly engineered situation from back in the 40s, even possibly sooner than that. And we've heard Dr. Horowitz talk about his research, which coincides with a lot of that. So, I mean, now we're dealing with how we can basically counteract it. And let's take a call now. We've got Tom calling in. Good evening, Tom. You're on with my guest, Dr. Horowitz.
Yeah, hello, Mike and Dr. Horowitz. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I have a real quick tidbit, and then I have a personal thing to relate, and I'll be quick. But I saw a piece by the Associated Press that it's possible that Bill Clinton and the state of Arkansas are going to be sued by some AIDS and hepatitis patients in Canada. When Clinton was governor of Arkansas, he had a friend that ran a blood company.
Yes.
And they went into the state prisons and took blood from the inmates.
Yes.
And sent that up to Canada. Or did you hear? Have you heard about that?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Action suits developing around all of this topic these days.
Right.
Yep.
Right. Was it 1978 that the people were encouraged to get the swine flu shots?
75.
Oh, okay.
That was a horrendous swine flu vaccine fiasco.
Okay. But
and they continued. I mean, it's still continuing to this very day.
Right. But my wife and I lived in Durango in 1978, and we got flu shots.
Yep.
And shortly after, my son was conceived.
Yep.
And at 3 months of age, he was diagnosed with a rare form of leukemia.
That's very, very common. I'm hearing that all over the United States.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just thought I'd relate that on. It's just an interesting program. It's scarier than hell.
It
scares me. Thank you.
It's horrifying. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Tom, for your call. Appreciate it. Now, let me ask you this. You know, bringing up the name Clinton on the program leads one to wonder, you know, about all these different things that he's involved in. I'm curious, Dr. Horowitz, if you have any idea if there are a trail of bodies associated with this particular fiasco, like there are with Clinton Gate and, you know, the Kennedy assassination, things like that. Is this research that you've done, what kind of fire has it drawn for you? I mean, I know you've mentioned earlier that you've been blackballed or blacklisted. What other types of things? Have you been threatened or has anyone tried to stop you from putting this information out?
Actually, only mildly threatened. And in terms of the fact of the matter is that the media is so well controlled that they could literally allow a half a dozen people like myself out and it still wouldn't have a major impact on the massive mind, you know, the sheeple, that they can lead to slaughter through the mass media. And basically, The best thing that they've been able to do is ignore me, and they've tried to ignore me. I blew them out. First of all, I debated Peter Duesberg on national radio. I blew him out. Basically, I've debated CDC top CDC vaccine officials, one FDA vaccine official in Chicago about a year and a half ago. I blew them out. The best thing that they could do is try to avoid any discussion of my work, and that's, in fact, one of the most incriminating facts.
I think you're right.
See, I presented this, Michael. I presented this thesis at the 11th International Conference on AIDS in Vancouver on July 10th, 1996, where I had the privilege of becoming the first investigator in the history of the esteemed International AIDS Conference to defend a scientific paper saying that these types of viruses, HIV and all the simian immunodeficiency relatives, are undoubtedly laboratory creations. And we collected a tremendous amount of press in Canada. We got no press at all in the United States. And the fact that we've submitted papers to Nature and Lancet and that there's complete blackout of this is outrageous. It's actually as outrageous as when you think about it today. I guarantee you that about 25 to 30% of the people listening tonight have themselves or their friends and family suffering with this upper respiratory infection that won't quit.
Yes, I have it myself.
Uh-huh. And now think about this. The CDC will tell you a year in advance already what new swine flu you can expect coming from Asia.
Right, you got to get down there and get that shot.
That's right. And they got the vaccine all prepared already. And if that's not the case, if that's not bad enough, they've got you telling you if the smallest, slightest outbreak of a few dozen cases of flu anywhere in the United States happens, they'll tell you right away on the mainstream media. But now you've got 25 to 30% of the United States public suffering with this bizarre upper respiratory infection that my colleagues and I have diagnosed as a fungal infection, primarily because you have low body temperature. If it was high body temperature, it would be a viral or bacteria. Meanwhile, all the docs are out there are prescribing antibiotics, which do virtually no good to this thing.
Right.
And so this thing is coming back, and it's coming back, and it's low grade, low body temperature, little chronic fatigue. It doesn't keep you out of work, but it gets a little bit better. You get a little stressed, comes back again. See, now they're not telling you one thing about this. Now, if that's not incriminating, I don't know what is it, you know, itself. See, there's so much that points to cover-up.
this respiratory thing you're talking about is indeed different because I've had it 5 weeks.
That's right.
I get better, and then all of a sudden it seems like it recurs.
Yeah, if you want to get rid of it, here's what you've got to do. You've got to, number one, do a detoxification program using cayenne pepper in what was used to be called the master cleanser. It's like you make a fresh squeezed lemon juice lemonade with grade B maple syrup in a gallon container, and then you spoil it by throwing in the hottest cayenne pepper that you can find. Do a fast on that for at least 3, ideally 4, 5, or 6 days. And that cayenne pepper, you keep downing it, it raises your body temperature, and it deacidifies the body. See, those funguses hate an alkaline body. They love and they grow, just like cancer cells grow, and just like bacteria and viruses grow in an acidified state. And our bodies become acidified. That is, the terrain in which the bacteria or the infectious agents grow, it becomes acidic because of the lifestyle risks, including caffeine, nicotine, sugar, alcohol, stress, and allopathic medications, that is, drugs. And that turns our body chemistry acidic.
There you go.
And that's what causes the growth of these microorganisms. So if you want to change that, the cayenne pepper is the highest pH type of substance that you can down. And that you also raises your body temperature. So you're going to, you know, basically whack out these funguses by doing that. It takes about a week to get rid of this thing. But once you start on this path, that you're going to get rid of it.
That sounds like good advice. And welcome back, my guest, Dr. Leonard Horowitz. The book is Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola. Leonard, what I'd like to do is I'd like to touch upon the I guess you could call it, you said it was called, the myth of how AIDS is transmitted. One of the things I've noted, this might be a real odd observation, but how much do we have to believe, or how much do we believe that it is truly a blood-borne or body fluid transmitted disease and not something else?
Well, I think it's fairly well established that it is a blood-borne pathogen,
okay,
a sexually transmitted disease, an IV drug user disease, but that's truly a myth as well. What they won't tell you is that it primarily it's a vaccine-related disease. It's a vaccine-borne disease. And in my presentations, and we produced a video where I go into this particular subject, it's called Emerging Viruses and Vaccinations,
mm-hmm.
where I show you from the American Journal of Public Health a study that was done and published in 1989 on IV drug users in six U.S. regions that show you that in Baltimore, Maryland, and New York City, there is an extraordinary increase in the number of HIV/AIDS cases among IV drug users. And that would not be the case unless AIDS discriminated. See, we're all told that AIDS doesn't discriminate, and it's primarily through these risky sex habits or these IV drug using abusing habits that we are susceptible to getting it.
Right.
When you look at, for example, Tampa, Florida, where the IV drug users don't have any AIDS, compared to, for example, Denver, where you're broadcasting from, where there was 5% of the IV drug users share their bloody needles. I'm sorry, it was about 80% share their bloody needles, yet only about 5% carry the AIDS virus. And compare that to Johns Hopkins area, Baltimore, Maryland, where you had suddenly jumped up to 30-some-odd percent carry the AIDS virus, and then goes even worse in New York City, where 60-some-odd percent carry the AIDS virus. You see that in Baltimore, Maryland, in New York City, New York, there was something bizarre happening in the IV drug user community. And what was that? It was the experimental hepatitis B vaccines being given to the junkies as they came into the treatment centers. They were being asked, have you had your hepatitis shot because you're at risk for hepatitis B infection given your risky drug use history, so you better get this vaccine. And that's precisely how those people most plausibly got that disease, through the hepatitis B vaccines, just like the gay men got it in New York City and the blacks in Central Africa got it.
This brings back a memory of mine from probably about 1982. I was dating a girl who worked for a doctor, and there was a big talk going around their office about this bulletin that he had received from the CDC about getting all of his known homosexual patients to come in to his office for a hepatitis B vaccine.
Right.
These things kind of ring true. I mean, they come back to memory.
That's right. And when you put all the pieces together and you follow the history of these, and you know, of course, it's so unbelievable. And you don't want to believe it because there's a loving person in your heart that doesn't want to believe that there'd be such evil around, that people that would do such things. And yet when you lay out all the documentation, you can't conclude anything but AIDS is genocide with a capital G.
And this is kind of the, I hate to keep saying this or bring this back, but we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. And, this whole New World Order / environmental movement and the whole thing and how all of this stuff relates. It's interrelated.
That's right.
There's this horrific monolith that's down in Elberton, Georgia, I believe it is, where they pledged to reduce the world's population to 500 million people. Any sane, rational person would want to know, how the hell do they plan on doing this?
Right.
You know, and this has to come, this comes up because this type of thing, what I'd like to do is, if I may, I'd like to read a quote that you have in your book from Russian dissident Alexander Solzhenitsyn.
Yeah.
Solzhenitsyn is the correct pronunciation of the name. He says, to do evil, a human being must first of all believe that what he's doing is good. Ideology, that is what gives devil doing its long-sought justification, and gives the evildoer the necessary steadfastness and determination. That is the social theory which helps to make his acts seem good instead of bad in his own and others' eyes, so that he won't hear reproaches and curses, but will receive praise and honors.
I think of Henry Kissinger.
I think of a lot of guys,
yeah.
Including the creep that just died, Gottlieb.
Oh, man, he was something else.
You know, my question is this. I mean, and I'm sure you pondered this long and hard in your research. How do people truly get to this point of doing stuff like this? I mean, what gives them the right to make decisions of this magnitude?
Well, you know, as a behavioral scientist, you know, with an MPH from Harvard in behavioral science,
uh-huh.
I think a lot of it has to do with early childhood trauma,
uh-huh.
where people don't grow like normal loving, open-hearted human beings. They don't have the ethics and morals and values instilled in them because of positive experiences. They go through some trauma, either ritualized trauma, and that, as you well know, is very intimately involved in MKUltra.
Uh-huh.
All the mind control experiments that many in the CIA were subject to, and all the people and all the mental institutions that were used as experimental guinea pigs. I think trauma-based behavior mod was what was really in vogue during the 40s and 50s, and even 60s. Now they've gone even beyond that to more sophisticated ways of controlling people. But basically, I suspect strongly that what makes these types of people, like Henry Kissinger, we'll use as an example, at age 16, when he and his parents were about to leave Nazi Germany because the Holocaust was coming on, his greatest gripe was why he couldn't march with the other Nazi youth in the street. Now, this is allegedly a Jew. Now, something's wrong with that type of a human being.
Mm-hmm.
There's something really bizarre about that man. And, of course, when you read his biography by Walter Isaacson, the guy is a psychopath. Yet, honestly, I'm telling you, that
I believe it.
He is a complete psychopath. And yet this is the man who was given control over CIA, FBI, and foreign policy at the time they developed these types of microorganisms for germ warfare and population control.
And, you know, what you say is very true, because I read something the other day. We've got to take another break, but I want to just mention this before we go into the break. I read something the other day where there is an alarming number of psychopathic deviants who are heading Fortune 500 companies.
Yeah, I believe it.
Okay, this kind of gives you kind of an idea of where this whole world is headed. What I'd like to do is, real quick, if you could, give out any particulars to people how they can reach you, how they can order the book.
Okay, the best recommendation I have is, though you in Denver area, you have the Tattered Cover. Basically, they have stock of emerging viruses, AIDS, and Ebola. It's a wonderful bookstore. Great people there. People can't. If you don't want to go to the bookstore, call 1-888-508-4787. That's 1-888-508-4787. And like you say, Michael, the easy way to remember it is 1-888-50-VIRUS, V-I-R-U-S. And then if you want to get some email to me, I'm like swamped to the max, but basically we've got a fabulous website that's set up with free downloadable files. And you could spend a whole day reading those files. They're fascinating. And you have links to other organizations and individuals who are making a difference in this area and the areas that we've touched upon tonight. That website address is www.tetrahedron. That's the geometric figure. It's spelled T as in Thomas, E-T-R-A-H-E-D-R-O-N. .org as an organization. That's tetrahedron.org. And that you can drop me an email posting there. I've been swamped so much. I've got a brand new book coming out very soon, and that's why I have been a little bit negligent in getting back to my emails. I'll try my best.
Okay, well, listen, we're out of time. I want to thank you for being on the program, and I'd like to invite you back to talk about some of the ways that people can remedy this and maybe turn this around. And we'll book you for a later date if that's okay.
I'll be happy to do it. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much for being with us tonight. Again, that was Dr. Leonard Horowitz, the book Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola. And that's it for us tonight. You